I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy hoy everybody, and welcome to Talk to the Audience, where this is always death. I am one of your hosts, Bob Mackey, fighting plagiarism every day of my life, who is here with me today as always.
Hey, it's Henry Gilbert. Still sad that there were no DVD or game or movie announcements this week.
I'm also sad about a few of those things. But yes, welcome to our community podcast. If you're listening on the Patreon, this hits at the end of the month. If you're on the free feed, this hits at the beginning of the month. What we do on this podcast is talk about Simpsons news and also what's happening in our neck of the woods. And also we respond to questions and comments left on our Patreon. And this has been a fairly uneventful month. We did a bit of traveling in June and May, but I think all of July was just us podcasting. Nothing exciting happened.
I didn't get COVID again this month.
No, so double COVID.
Good. No, I mean, I did have a slight little cough that has mostly gone away now, but I'm feeling good, folks. I'm feeling all right. Yeah.
It's been a month of recovery and healing.
Yeah. Well, and soon, next month, I'll be doing all the things. This was just a lot of podcast recording this month. So, like, next week, I'm getting a haircut. Next week, I'm going to go see a show. Well, actually, we did a bit of that this
month, we'll
too.
Talk about it. But, the traveling will be happening next month, possibly PAX. We have nothing to announce yet.
Nope.
But fingers crossed on that.
Tell PAX to get on emailing people now. It's a month away the dang show is. Man.
So let's talk about Simpsons news. Mm-hmm. So Emmy nominations happened. And When Billy Met Lisa, the Simpsons short, got an Emmy nomination for Best Short. And I will say it's a good-looking short. It's also a commercial.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I say not deserved. That's my opinion.
I mean,
I'm trying to be nice, but it's kind of lackluster. I mean, it's fine for what it is, but I don't think it deserves an Emmy.
What if it's better than all the other shorts that were commercials? What about that?
It might be the only short that is a commercial that was nominated.
Yeah. No, I think it's...
I mean, I know David Silverman directed it. He's great, but
we love him. Yeah, we have to say that every time, just to be clear. But yeah, I wouldn't have thought, I mean, I guess how many short subjects are there on TV? Now that it's streaming, I guess there's many short subjects all around. But, whatever. Yeah, I would bet it won't win. What if Simpsons steamrolls the competition like they do every, one out of every three Emmys, it seems like.
Yeah, they've got plenty of Emmys. They're not hurting for Emmys, so I don't think I'm being mean by saying this doesn't deserve an Emmy.
Even though I'm looking for that Pixelated and Afraid one. That I'd say that's a better episode of The Simpsons than Billy Met Lisa is as a short of The Simpsons, though I'd still say that, like, I didn't see what else it was up against, but in the animated category, I would bet there's some better stuff.
That's what's happening in Emmy news. Billy Met Lisa and Pixelated and Afraid. Also, at Comic-Con, there was some news about new episodes that I found particularly interesting.
So,
there are going to be two Treehouse of Horror episodes this year, possibly correcting the flaw that the number of the Treehouse is always one number behind the season.
Yeah.
So I think that's not the reason they're doing it, but it's interesting that maybe that will correct that perceived flaw with the numbering.
I wonder if the one that is a full episode parody will just be presented as a full episode, or it's called Treehouse of Horror Special, the subject, instead of calling it, 34. Because, yes, this is Treehouse 33 that they announced, but then also there will be a second one as well.
They better give it a number. There will be a full-length Treehouse of Horror episode based on It.
Yes, Krusty is It.
Yes.
They joked that they had saw a number of people who get tattoos of Krusty as Pennywise, the clown from It. And so now they are doing a full parody. Mm. I think Selman was coming out swinging in his promotion of this.
I saw,
He's like, we're doing tons of stuff. We're not going to just be sitting on our laurels. I think he's feeling refreshed. He's feeling powerful. But I think with a hit parody, it lets him have both sides of things. They get to do what Al Jean does, which is parody something that's like four decades old,
yeah,
but also something that's kind of recent because yeah, it just had the recent duo of films.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So that's what's happening with the full-length episode. They're also doing a traditional episode. Mm-hmm. One of the parodies they're doing is of the anime Death Note.
Yes.
Which is interesting because, mm-hmm, you know, they released a promotional image and I was like, this looks familiar. Where have I seen this before? But better. Oh, right. My wife drew the Bongo comic, the award-winning comic. Eisner
winning, yes,
winning comic, yeah, in 2008 with writer Ian Boothby. I mean, they did it first. They did it when Death Note was actually relevant. I know, mm-hmm, there's going to be another Death Note movie coming.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it seems very odd to me, mm-hmm, that not just any Bongo comic, but one that won an Eisner did, yeah, this first, and they're not acknowledging it. Mm-hmm. Nina or Ian, neither one are involved.
They found out when we found out.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I believe. Yeah.
And I say,
like, I think I saw Ian reply to Nina's tweet. So I first saw it in our on Twitter. And my instant thought was like, wait, Nina did that, didn't she? And before I added Nina saying like, hey, you seen this? Because I am certain she has seen that. This,
yes.
I then go to her Twitter feed and see she tweeted about it. And then Ian Boothby is like one of the first replies. I'm going like, they did what?
Yeah, I'm not trying to speak for Nina. If you want to know what she thinks about the situation, go to her Twitter at Space Coyote. But yeah, I don't like that they're doing this without any mention of what had come before. And yes, if you want to be a stinker, Bongo owns that property. Bongo owns that story and the art and everything. And, you know, they're not even like legally obligated to acknowledge that it, yeah, happened before. But it would be nice,
yeah,
if you're going to do your way too late parody to actually, mm-hmm, acknowledge the one that did it first and, mm-hmm, totally did it in a cool art style. And, yeah, again, won an Eisner.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's kind of lame they're not doing that, but I mean, we've talked about this as an overall thing, an issue with, there definitely seems to be, at least with the Simpsons writing producers, a feeling of the Simpsons comics aren't good, or they don't, yeah, care about them, or sometimes publicly on commentaries they make fun of them, which we thought was bad and sucked. Like, so yeah, I could totally see that this could have come up at some point, and at its beginning, they're like, oh, Death Note. Well, what if we parody that? Though it seems so random. Of all anime,
yeah,
of all, I guess, I mean, it's a scary comic and animation series, which makes it fit more for Treehouse than, like, it would make sense to do a Treehouse of, say, Dragon Ball or One Piece, you know?
Yeah,
but they could do one of a Junji Ito comic. They,
yeah,
could do that.
So, it's just, yeah, I mean, I guess it's Death Note is now a classic, even though it's barely 20 years old and the anime is like, I think, like 15 years old at this point.
Yeah,
maybe,
yeah,
even, yeah, I think it's like 15 years old, but it feels like a little late to the party with this. And then, you know, not acknowledging the original story. I'm repeating myself, but it sucks. And I don't like the situation. And you can check out what Nina has to say on her Twitter account. Again, I'm not speaking for her. These are my own thoughts, but it stinks.
Yeah,
it stinks.
I don't particularly like it. I mean, they could be easy to, we're too close to this story perhaps, but
I think so. Yeah.
But I do think, you know, it's this, I would think a way to do this that before it comes out, they could talk about this. Like, maybe Selman could get aware of this. Like,
yeah,
be made. Though it does strike me that, like, okay, a producer, again, we don't know. And this, I'm also not speaking for Nina or Ian. But you would, okay, I could totally see producers, high level producers, they don't know.
Yeah, of course not.
But when you go down all these levels, like, nobody in the animation studio knew about the Eisner winning comic of it.
Yeah.
Like, really? Like, and yeah, I mean, the design style of it is also like, of the one screenshot they showed of it, of the animation version of it, it does look good, though I thought Nina's looked better. Like, also, she captures that art style perfectly, because Nina is an incredibly talented artist, and I love that she revealed, or that extra detail she revealed in some of her tweets about it, was that, like, the extra handicap of that she had to perfectly capture that style, like, not just how the artist draws Death Note, but also, like, angles on it, character designs. Like, Lisa looks just like Elle. But then she revealed, like, oh, and I also still had to follow the house rule style of overbite, which is unnatural for,
yeah,
the art style she was mimicking.
I didn't even think I noticed until she pointed it out. That's how subtle it is.
Yeah.
But yes. But again, that's my thoughts on it. Maybe you could nicely tweet at Matt Selman or Al Jean and say, hey, Do you plan on acknowledging the original story that won an Eisner?
Yeah.
How about get Nina and Ian involved in some way, or at least give them some credit or a shout out or something?
You know what? I would feel like if they just hired Nina to do an official like a promotional poster of the episode, I bet she could do that.
And
we know she has reasonable rates, Fox. Like,
she's not hurting for work, but she I think she would love the opportunity.
But again, we're speaking for her here. That's not fair.
It's not our job. It's not our job to speak for women.
No, I know, but we're not inviting women on this. But,
No.
But
it's not as bad as burying the Eisner Award-winning work of a woman, I would say.
No, I would agree. I would agree. But it was, and again, it happened the same week as the Eisners. Like
Eisners, that's right.
On the anniversary of it winning the big award, which gave so much prestige to Bongo. Okay, but the other interesting bit about it I am curious about is they're going to hire an outside studio. They didn't say who.
I missed that detail.
They say it's just not one of their standard studios to animate that segment. And they didn't say what the other segments are going to be, though Matt Selman in an interview did say one of the segments, they do more than four now even, they do like, you know, 90-second segments or whatever. He says one will break some rules, quote, break some of the rules we've never broken before, which what could that be?
Simpsons porn. making it legal.
They're making it, I mean, I would say one of the clear rules is Homer can't be violent to Lisa. Are we going to see that? I don't want to see that, but, or will they say shit? Will they get away? You know, even in the movie, they didn't say shit. They could, you can get away with one shit on TV now.
Well, on Disney Plus though, can you?
Ooh,
dare
boy.
You?
I don't know. Well, you know, Deadpool's on Disney Plus now. So
really?
Bets are
wow.
Off. Yes. Yeah.
I guess I had to sign that waiver when they added all the 14 plus content.
If you went to Disney Plus this weekend, you'd see, Deadpool stretched out over the top of it. Yes.
So more less angering season 34 news. Melissa McCarthy will be a guest playing the son of Abe's new girlfriend, and Krusty will become an Ellen style talk show host, though it seems like they're playing on the
Ellen is mean stories. Yes.
Based on the description, it seemed like they're playing on the like Krusty can't handle being nice. I think that's like the pitch of the story, but maybe they're playing off the Ellen is mean. It did, like, based on the pitch I read in articles, it didn't seem like they were underlining the Ellen sucks to work for part.
You know, a little bit. It definitely, though, I mean, maybe it is a Krusty. It's about Krusty can't be nice all the time on television, like for the morning show. It's right there on a silver platter. Like, this isn't even like hushed tones you can talk about, like, hey, nobody talks about it, but Ellen's not very nice. Like, no, this was front page headlines, and she quit her show over it. So
that's true.
Yeah, I feel like they could, and it's so easy. Krusty being he already is an asshole boss. He was a joke about being an asshole to Johnny Carson style boss.
That's true. Yeah, I'm sure they'll acknowledge it. I just want to see how it'll pan out. But no other big news. No games. No new movies. No new DVDs. Alex Hirsch hosted the panel. I saw the image that David Silverman drew of Homer fighting Shrek.
Yes.
I also saw one that he drew of like Skinner and Chalmers watching the Aurora Borealis together. So it was all very fun, but not very fluffy. Nothing big. No giant news. No like Simpsons Hit and Run remastered. No season 20 actual season 20 DVDs with commentaries. Nothing like that.
Yeah. When 11:30 came around, when also because this was the first real Comic-Con since 2019. This was not a streamed panel like the last 2 years have been because they were stay-at-home panels. This was a real panel. So the news of it all dropped. Like Variety and Entertainment Weekly just hit publish like while the panel was going on, or maybe right after. And when I went into the Variety article, it said, you know, it described those upcoming episodes, and then it said, now don't expect anything about DVDs or movies or video games. And I was like, oh, well. It really is deflating.
At least you're not going to be set up for disappointment.
I guess so. It just
you'll be disappointed.
It sucks how much they Disney doesn't want to do the DVDs anymore. That's pretty clear now.
Yeah.
But at least Gravity Falls creator Alex Hirsch had some fun making David Silverman draw a couple silly things.
And there are also more action figures on the way. There's a wave 3 of the Super 7 figures, and that's going to be Kang, Kodos with Maggie, Burns, and Ralph. And these are all very cool. I haven't gotten one of these yet. I might want to get the Burns one. I'm thinking about it.
Hey, if you pre-order it now, you'll get it in 2024.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm still
Suez Canal is still blocked up.
I ordered that Krusty and I haven't even gotten like the first hint of when it'll be coming out.
They have to open every package and remove the cigarette first.
Disney. But yeah, no, the Kang and Kodos are great. I mean, it's the accessories that really make the difference in them.
Yeah, like, all very, very easy to lose, it looks like.
Yes, yeah. Well, that's why you're not supposed to take them out of the box, or you buy two. Like, yeah, that I think my favorite is that Kang comes with a Earth Capital sign. I think that's my favorite. Though Burns does come with a Bobo and a Blinky served on a platter and perfectly steeplable fingers.
Oh, nice. Yeah the sculpts are very good on those. Mm-hmm.
Or at least the theoretical sculpts. These are all like, you know, the
prototypes.
Yeah, yeah. The Super 7 hasn't failed yet. I've never heard people say, like, oh, they all suck. They never turn out how they look.
I'm impressed by them so far. So there's going to be a new documentary on The Simpsons, a 6-part doc by the show Icons Unearthed. And yes, it's from the director of the toys and the movies that made us, so I won't be watching. But I'm sure a lot of good interviews will come out of it, though I imagine 90% of them will be left on the cutting room floor to make room for record scratch sound effects and wacky video transitions and narrators talking over people that are supposedly boring.
But our bro Bill Oakley's in it, you know? I'm rooting for it. Yeah, listeners, especially have talked to the audience, know that when we get into like what we watch things, I both hate but also have watched most of the docs from the series of the Toys That Made Us or the Movies That Made Us, or also the same group of people did, now I can't remember the name of it, but it was about the Disney attractions as well. And all of them are so frustrating because they actually do great, great interviews, or they find the people that, like, if you gave me a list of here's the people you should talk to and they'll dish the dirt on all these things, they pretty much get all of them. Like, usually it's like, oh, well, they couldn't get James Cameron for Aliens, but they got the writer and the executive producer and like the guy who did all the special effects. But and this, like, of the list of, there's also some people who are just like, oh, that's the funny, here's a comedian just to say stuff. And I left that bullshit out of there. But of my list of guests, but they have Bill Oakley, Rich Moore, John Vitti, Mimi Pond. Now, I mean, that's some dirt there. Todd McFarlane, who, you know, among all those other great things he did, he made all those great Simpsons toys. And Phil Roman, who I don't think I've seen a couple Phil Roman interviews. He talks more about Garfield than Simpsons in most of them. Like, he rarely talks about working on
that's
Simpsons.
How he made his first castle.
Yeah,
it's built out of Garfield gold.
I mean, but yeah, so these are all, we know the stories that these people could tell. And I feel like if they want to find dirt for it, Bill Oakley can certainly talk about the critic thing, or that he's not been invited back to the party. Mimi Pond, we did a whole interview with her. She's told her story. Like, John Vitti knows where the bodies are buried, but I wonder how, you know, angry or not he'll make people in that. But,
well, you know, James L. Brooks, he has the iron curtain he throws down.
Because
when that unauthorized oral history came out, it was like basically all hands on deck with him saying, do not talk to this person.
Yes, yeah. I mean, that shows you that Vitti is not part of that group no more. But yeah, it seems like a lot of the other classics ain't in there. Like, no David Silverman, no... These people should get Wes Archer. He seems pretty open to talk, but yeah, I mean, I'll check it out. 6 parts too. It's like, wow, they're really going deep in this thing. I'm sure it'll be better than the other, like, fawning, like, there's that BBC doc from like 20 years ago that I thought was like, meh, kind of. I've never seen a good Simpsons documentary.
That's because we make the best Simpsons documentary content.
Yeah. I mean, also I'm mad at maybe it's because I've shit all over his work on these things, but Icons on Earth, you can't talk to us. You can't work with the talking Simpsons.
Yeah, the
guys.
Number one Simpsons podcasters. Yeah. What's going on here?
And if Allie and Julie are in this, I'm going to be extra jealous. but yes, look forward to it next year. Icons on Earth season 2 on Vice TV.
And our final bit of news, do I hear wedding bells? No, I haven't gone crazy, because Yardley Smith got married for the third time to Dan Grice. They met 8 years ago at a Simpsons fan event in Springfield, Oregon.
Yes.
And he was working security. So he later became a co-host on her podcast, Small Town Dicks. Mm-hmm. And then they fell in love.
Yeah, he's Detective Dan, as she referred to him on that podcast. And yeah, they've known each other for 8 years, and finally, I think it was, you know, they got a post-COVID wedding. They can finally have their wedding post-COVID.
Some of us had to do that.
Yeah, you know, John Cena just got married in Vancouver. I shared with you, I was like, hey, look, you and John Cena, you both got for regular married during the pandemic, and then had an your actual like party and stuff in Vancouver. How
yes,
nice.
My wife and I have a number of different wedding anniversaries. You can listen to us fall in love on our podcast. Hey, listen to
right.
Summer 4 Foot 2. That's Nina's first guest appearance in person. You can hear the hearts floating above my head.
But you know, Yardley Smith, she seems like a real sweetheart.
Yeah,
she was quite nice to us for the 30 seconds we spent around her. She was very nice.
She definitely humored us, and yeah. I appreciate that.
I wish her and Detective Dan nothing but the wedded bliss, especially because they're a podcasting couple. Like, isn't that also beautiful, too?
Couples who podcast together. I need a rhyme. I'll get back to you.
Well, I mean, well, together rhymes with together, but podcast.
Listeners, you figure it out. Yeah. It's a contest.
It's early in the morning here. Yeah. Where our brain, we're not as snappy as usual.
It's true. I don't even have coffee with me for once.
Oh, man.
I have water. Yuck. So let's move on to talk about what's happening in our world. Our schedule. Let's talk about that. So our What a Cartoon episode for August will be the Smiling Friends episode, Enchanted Forest.
Ooh.
Yes, we're covering a fairly new show, a show from 2022, mm-hmm. and it's a new Adult Swim hit. It's very, very funny, and this is brought to us by one of our patrons, Professor Gascan, and we're really excited to talk about this. Actually, we recorded it like over 2 months ago. Or maybe 2 months ago, but very funny series. And
if you guessed it when Bob was tweeting that he had watched the Rankin-Bass Hobbit movie, you were right.
Yes.
That was the tip-off.
And it's a very, very good parody of that. So, kicking off August with a look at a new series. It's a lot of fun.
Man, the Australian guy from Smiling Friends, he's got a rocket strapped to him by the Adult Swim Factory, because at Comic-Con, he just announced a new show.
Oh, really?
The Koala Man show.
Oh, yeah.
Which he's making with Justin Roiland. So,
I was going to say, he's this decade's Justin Roiland.
Yeah. And it seems, like most of his stuff, aggressively Aussie as well.
I love it.
Yeah.
So for patrons in August, as usual, we have our Patreon exclusive miniseries. The first one, Talking Futurama, will be covering the episode Godfellas, mm-hmm. A parody of a classic Twilight Zone, kind of, but it's also asking a lot of questions about, is God real? Is he a giant robot that we live on? Things like that.
It's a gorgeous, gorgeous episode, too. Yeah.
Yes. And also on Talking of the Hill, we'll be covering Junkie Business, possibly the first bad episode that still has funny parts, but it's very wrong-headed. You'll hear us complain about it plenty on that episode. We just recorded it recently, and it's still fresh in my mind.
Yeah, we have a lot of grousing about the libertarian BS of it, history has proven these were very unfounded worries that the episode had about the ADA.
But absolutely.
We dig deep into it.
Small businesses are fine. Yes. Ours is doing well.
Yeah.
That's for $5 and up patrons at patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. And the entire back catalog is there as well. And for our movie for August, our What a Cartoon movie, we're covering The Rescuers Down Under.
Down Under.
End our Disney Renaissance summer. So, so far this summer we've done Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, and now we're closing it out with The Rescuers Down Under, filling that important gap between Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast.
Boy, it's a real, it's 89, 90, 91. We are filling out that whole time, but I guess we went 89, 91, 90.
Yes,
but
we're mixing it up here. It's a crazy summer.
Yes, I mean, it's the odd one out in that it's not a musical, that it's a sequel to a 1977 film, and Disney would be totally done with this type of movie after this movie. But it also is a hugely important moment for Disney. Plus, you know, all those great animators we talked about who worked on Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast, they also worked on Rescuers Down Under, but nobody really talks about the animation in it.
Why it looks so good.
Yeah.
I have not seen it yet, but I'm looking forward to watching it. Mm-hmm. And again, if you want to listen to that, that's at the $10 level, but you can hear the extended free preview on the free feed or on the $5 level a week early. And then for September, our What a Cartoon Movie poll will be a yes-no vote on Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe, because we want to wash that Disney taste out of our mouth with our favorite rude teenagers who are going to be on Paramount Plus very, very soon with new episodes, a whole new season.
Yeah.
I saw a clip of them watching TikTok videos. And it's the same thing. It's like they didn't lose anything. Despite the media changing, the comments are still the same, and it's still funny.
It's so... Yeah, I watched that same one. It's the guy with the tattoo video,
yeah,
right?
Like showing you how to do like prison hacks.
Yes, it's like, you burn up my tea box. Why you burn up my... Oh, God, I love that. I love that guy. They are... Though it is a funny change in the dynamic, though. Instead of mocking very powerful rock and roll stars, they are mocking like a TikTok influencer, which some of those people are rich, but
yeah.
Other people just have a TikTok. But yeah, I they put out a whole like basically a full short as well, like an 8-minute short.
I was tempted. I'm waiting for the series to go live, but it's about Beavis like talking to a dumpster fire.
It's good.
Yeah.
I watched the whole thing. It was really good. But yeah, you know, we have had a Disney-fied year so far, and it's time to get a little dirty again.
It was like April, Roger Rabbit, and then May, Toy Story, and then 3 more months of Disney.
Yeah.
Now let's just, I think the rest of the year, no Disney or Pixar. That's correct.
Yes. Yeah. We've got, we did have The Filth of South Park, but even that was done in parody of Disney. It was basically parodying the movies we then spent all summer doing.
That's true. It was a good way to kick things off.
Plus, you know, here we've been all this nostalgic and shit, and not that we won't be nostalgic about Beavis and Butthead, but this is a 2022 ass movie, Do the Universe.
And we already both like it.
Yes, yeah. And we might have something cool in relation to Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe this month,
That's right.
we can't commit to it yet. You don't know, but maybe.
No promises, kids.
Yeah, no promises.
But yes, that's all on the Patreon at patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. Now, as for what we've been doing, you know, extracurricular activities, not for podcasting. I don't have a lot going on. I fell into a real Monster Hunter hole because the expansion just came out. I'm playing Monster Hunter a lot, Monster Hunter Rise. It's really good, and I can mention a game that no one has heard of and no one has played. World's End Club.
Yeah, I saw your tweet about it. I was like, wait, what?
Exactly. If you like Danganronpa and, you know, Virtue's Last Reward and 999, don't play this because it's like a bad version of that made by the same people.
Oh,
not very good.
Sad.
I regret the time I spent on it.
That's too bad.
But I actually took a weekend off, which I never do, and I finished up a bunch of games I had like almost finished. So I also finished Kirby Squeak Squad and Castlevania Harmony of Dissonance. So finishing up some old portable games that were, 80% done.
Cool, man. Yeah, no, it seemed like Monster Hunter Rise is your big one because often I would go on the Discord and see like, oh, Bob's playing this now. I was like, okay, wow, he's really doing Monster Huntering it up this month.
I'm close to 100 hours, but that's not really anything for Monster Hunter, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So as for watching, I am watching more One Piece at the gym. I'm in the Water 7 arc. It's getting really good. I'm enjoying One Piece. I'm watching like 8 episodes a week.
Wow.
So conceivably, I could catch up. I'm only in episode like 280. We'll see where I end up.
And you're going to be jacked by the time you get to the end of it.
I am skipping the filler arc. So
you can
cut out like 200 episodes before we get to 1,000. I saw Cabaret for the first time because of the Blank Check podcast miniseries on Bob Fosse. I got to support our fellow entertainment Bobs.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And yes, very, very good. I don't need to tell you that. It's great.
Yeah, I watched it too this month, and it was me and you watched about half of the same movie.
It's true.
But yeah, what a time to watch Cabaret, a film about the rise of fascism as people like, you know, just have fun around it and don't take it seriously.
If you're at a picnic and someone starts singing a song, get out of there. Get the hell out of there.
Especially when everybody else speaks German most of the time and he sings it in English.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, now that, but you know what? That song is entrancing. The Tomorrow Belongs to Me.
It's a well-written Nazi anthem.
That's why it's so evil. But and it's got an abortion in it too, just to make it all time
and bisexuality. It's got all this stuff in it. So also I'll mention these, although you'll hear us talk about these on something else, so I won't say anything more. I saw a new animated movie, so did Henry. Mad God and the Spine of Night. They're fun. Mad God is very disgusting, but it's one insane man's passion project that he got finished. So kudos to him. And we'll talk more about those on something else. You'll hear it at some point in the future.
We'll share with you when you hear about it. But yeah, it was certainly a change of pace. And we talk about all that Disney stuff we're living on.
Oh, boy.
We haven't watched these unrated, would likely be NC-17 were they to be rated movies. Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Both on Shudder, if you want to watch it there. Yeah.
And I also saw Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade because I'm doing a podcast about the adventure game. And I have only seen this one once on DVD, like in 2007. So I haven't seen it in like 15 years. And I was like, oh, man, this movie is so good. And it's almost perfect, except for that kind of cringy beginning. Like, it's so good. And this is like the tackiest thing to say because everyone has said it, but it's funny to think that Sean Connery is 59 in that movie and Harrison Ford will be 80 in the new movie coming out next year.
So fucking old. He's so old.
I mean,
old,
I think
man.
He's only like 12 years older than Harrison Ford. So the father-son thing doesn't really work if you think about it.
Well, because he's younger than, he's younger than he's playing.
Exactly, but,
Well, I mean, I guess that's technically what Indy is doing in the new movie, but it's like, I don't know that, but the opening, it's really just like, isn't River Phoenix awesome? He's going to be the star of the 90s, guys. Like, that's what it was about.
It's like, well, that's the origin of that. It's like, I didn't need to know how he got Harrison Ford's scar on his chin. I assumed it was a carpentry accident.
Well, and, you know, it's the pilot for the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. Yeah. That's what it's really about.
And that wasn't even successful.
No.
And then Henry and I in theaters.
Oh, boy. What a day.
At the Castro Theater, they decided, let's show a movie. Why not? We're a Castro Theater.
It's crazy.
We don't really do that anymore since we have evil new owners. Mm-hmm. So, Henry and I saw a double feature of Gremlins and Gremlins 2 The New Batch with Joe Dante, and also the writer of The New Batch was there for the second part of the of the show. And these were preview cuts shown to audiences before the final cut, so there's different footage. Unfortunately, I don't know these movies well enough to tell you what's different, but it was a treat.
I can tell a couple of the biggies from Gremlins 1, which was the big one was, and I never noticed it was like a hanging thread in the original version, but like Judge Reinhold's a dick the whole movie. And the whole start of the movie. And he's like, you should be brave like me. I'm a badass. Like, you need to be really go for it, Billy. And then when all the shit goes down, they go to the vault at the bank, you know, which is where she tells her story about Santa Claus and her father. But they, in the scene that's not in the theatrical release, and that I'd never seen before or heard about before, though I'm also not like a Gremlin scholar, was they open up the vault and they're like, oh, hey, you're in here. He's like, yeah, everything went bad. And they also murdered the bank manager, which they don't. I think it was to keep the body count lower.
Okay.
And so Judge Reinhold's like, so I'm staying safe in here. You guys deal with it. And they like he's like this sad, pitiful guy. And the other big change was the Wicked Witch character, the awful lady.
Yeah.
They give her a couple moments at home where she's sad about her dead husband.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I think Dante mentioned that in like the post movie interview.
Yeah. He's like, oh, yeah, she's too. Well, because he's like, oh, that made her too sympathetic. So we want you to not feel too bad when she's dead. Those were the two biggies he pointed out afterwards. Because, there were honestly like, I didn't have as much knowledge of it either. Going like, wait, what's new in this? But, I also felt a little bad for Joe Dante that I felt the interviewer was a little too leading with him and saying like, are these really political? He's like, yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
And then he's like, you know, guys, Joe Dante is 76. He's like, why are you think I'm going to feel good about being 76? Why tell? And then after Joe Dante's gone, the host is like, guys, Joe Dante's not going to live forever. It's like, well, then why be so fucking morbid? We're here to have a nice time.
Yeah. I'm sure he knows that too, you know?
Yeah, no. That's,
it was a weird note to drop on us there.
I thought that guy was too much. Also, it's like...
Well, he is the guy who made that his thing.
The
movie marathon. Yeah, sorry. It's a Midnight for Maniacs now?
Yeah, well, now it's called Movies for Maniacs.
Midnights. We're all getting too old.
They don't go after midnight anymore. Now, I mean... I think Dante was a little like, I got the sense Dante didn't love him interviewing him, but it was, you know, then an addendum to that was after we went to the Castro, that's when I became aware of the Save the Castro Conservancy movement, which just a quick lip service to that is that the Castro Theater, which I love, Bob loves too, my husband proposed to me officially in front of that theater. We saw many great movies there. It got bought by a new company that's based out of Berkeley called Another Planet Entertainment, APE, and who ran the event, and the host gave it so much lip service. Like, it was like, and let's thank APE for our partners. But what I learned from Save Castro Conservancy, which is not it is a group of fans, they are going to change the inside of it and get rid of the theater seating. It will not be a sloped seat. It will not be a sloped thing down to it. It'll be a flattened thing. And also it'll be where they can move in seats, but also move them out and have an open floor thing to do lots of events there. That is bullshit.
Like, yeah, I don't like that.
The Castro needs to stay the same. The point of having the Castro, there are a million places in San Francisco you can go to with an open dance floor. Like, the Castro is the Castro, and I learned about it because the owners of the Castro are being very defensive about it. Like, we need to modernize. Like, it's not going to be bad.
Yeah, like, they're like, people are being unfair.
Yeah.
Well, I think the Castro is even more special. This is local news, by the way.
Yes, the
Castro is even more special because, and I'm sure this could be happening in your neck of the woods, listener, all of our local theaters are closing.
Yep.
There were three in downtown Berkeley. Now there's 100-year-old
two. 100-year-old one gone. Yeah.
Older than that.
Yeah.
It's actually older. The Castro turned 100. That one was like 112 or something, or 110, the California theater. So, yeah, I mean, it sucks. And we're anti ape here on the podcast.
Yeah, I know. It's just like everything's getting more corporate. It sucks.
Yeah.
I mean,
but about Gremlins.
Yes, Gremlins.
I'm not a Gremlins super fan. Mm-hmm. And I realize that's because the effects are fun and I love it and it's a fun ride, but it's so bad at telling a story, which is why the second movie is just a bunch of sketches.
Yes.
The first movie, I'm like, wasn't there something in here about a land developer? They completely lose that. It's like, what was going on? And the movie made me truly appreciate Michael J. Fox upon watching it again, because Zach Galligan is a dead-eyed nobody. Zero charisma.
That's why he didn't have much success after.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Hired because he's cute. Mm. But it makes you realize, like, Billy is as much of a character as Marty. He is like a nothing.
Yeah.
And Michael J. Fox's manic performance made Marty McFly into a fun character to watch.
Yeah.
And to root for. Billy is a nobody.
Yeah.
And I can't stand Billy, which is why he's barely in the sequel, and there's like, will Billy sell out? Oh no. And I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah, he sucks. Yeah. Phoebe Cates' axe rings around him.
Yeah.
And she's so funny in it too. And yeah, I forgot seeing it. I'd never seen Gremlins 2 with a real since childhood in a theater. I had seen Gremlins 1 in the Castro before, actually, but just when she. To see them back to back, one, to see her big speech about Santa Claus.
Yeah, yeah.
And the reaction face on Gizmo of like, oh my God, the whole audience just explodes at that. And then to see him back to back when she does the same speech about why she doesn't like Lincoln's birthday.
Yeah.
They're like, we don't have time for this. And they just cut it off. God, so good.
Gremlins 2, a lot of fun.
And we got to see the crappy, not the full version, thank God, but the, boy, Chuck Jones shouldn't have been directing that thing.
Yeah.
It was a nice favor from Dante. I asked a nice question about his friendship with Chuck Jones, which Joe Dante was happy to answer.
The first time I noticed Chuck Jones in the first movie.
Yes.
At the bar.
Yep. Yeah. He's complimenting Billy's work, which he's like, that's good drawing and I should know. Thanks. Thanks, Mr. Jones.
Oh, he calls him Mr. Jones?
I think he does. Okay. I think he does.
So yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And finally, just a few days ago, I finally got around to watching Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion. Have never seen it, and I've always wanted to see it because David Merkin from The Simpsons wrote and directed it. Sorry, directed it. But it is such his movie. Spoilers for Romy and Michelle, by the way. Skip forward a minute if you don't want to hear this. What I love most about it, it has one of the best David Merkin screw the audience jokes, where they go to the reunion and 20 minutes of activity happens, and you're like, things are getting a bit heightened, but maybe that's where this movie is going. Then it's revealed that Lisa Kudrow's character was asleep in the car, and they had just shown up. So David Merkin wastes your time. David Merkin wastes your time for 20 minutes in that movie,
and
no apologies.
Yes,
and I was like, this is the perfect David Merkin joke to do this for a paying audience. This is what his entire career was leading up to.
Yeah, it's, man, I haven't seen that in a few years. In some years. I love that movie too. And before I knew David Merkin as the Simpsons man, I just liked it because, you know, Lisa Kudrow, I love her and stuff. Like, but yeah, I gotta watch that again soon. I'm glad you finally seen
it.
Yeah.
It wasn't like fall down on the floor funny, but it was very sweet.
And
I like the characters, and they're not as dumb as you might think they are going into the movie.
And Kudrow had been playing that character for years and years. Like, it's her bringing a character she invented to the big screen.
I think it was a play in like 1988.
Yeah, it's a Groundlings thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a bunch of movies I saw this month, and also we went to some live shows. Henry, you can talk more about that when we get to what he's been up to. I went to Minneapolis for a week. I love Minneapolis. Have not been there in 3 years because of COVID. Ostensibly, I was there for SGDQ, although I was only there for one day on the premises. It was really an excuse to eat and drink in Minneapolis with friends, and it was great. And it was the first, like, actual real trip to a non-location where my wife lives in a long time.
That's nice.
Because like all of our trips were would be me flying to her or her flying to me, because travel elsewhere, forbidden.
Yes.
So it was nice to go somewhere else. Although I love Vancouver, but it was like a Midwestern summer. I haven't felt this in years. And it was great. It was great.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. As for my month with games, played a bit more of FF14 because they had like a free week or thing at the end of June, which I had a good time with that. I played a lot of TMNT Shredder's Revenge. I've nearly beat it. Me and my husband playing together. I'm Leo. He's Donnie. That's normally who we're playing as. Though we haven't unlocked Casey Jones yet. I kind of want to play as him a bit. In April, it'd be fun to play as April. But since you level up and stuff in it, I kind of just want to stick with Leo. But yeah, it's gorgeous. Oh my God, it's so beautiful. Like, games need to look like this more often. It's
I'm waiting for a sale, but I do want to play through it.
See, you don't have Game Pass. That's how I've been playing.
I don't have Game Pass because the amount of games I own is anxiety inducing.
I get it. Yeah. Well, and speaking of free games included with subscriptions, I've also been playing Stray on the PS5. It's a lot of fun. It's just a nice puzzle platformer with a cool gimmick to it that you are just like a cute kitty cat. I have seen some people complaining that it has a bit of techno-orientalism, which it is. French developers, they sometimes can fall into that. I don't think it's not wrong, but I will reserve judgment until I like finish the game. But and then I went to... me and Bob both play Pikmin Bloom all the time. We were lucky. There were three cities in the U.S., one in Texas, one in New York, and then Oakland, California.
Take that, flyover states.
It had Pikmin Bloom Community Day, where if you go to the Jack London, this is over now. If you went to Jack London Square in Oakland by the docks, you could prove to them, like, here, I've taken 5,000 steps today, and I've taken far more than that. And they're like, all right, here's your free t-shirt. And they got me a free t-shirt and a Pikmin hat, like a little paper hat. But the t-shirt is an actual, like, good t-shirt. It's one of the t-shirts you can wear in game. So
It's a nice fit.
So it was cool to be at Pikmin Bloom Community Day. It was also like a Pokemon Community Day. And it was basically like there were 12 Pokemon fans for every one Pikmin fan there. But
we were important. We matter.
You know, I think the Pikmin fans were about 5 to 10 years older than the Pokemon fans there. Mm-hmm. But it was a good time.
Well, the last new game was like 9 years ago. So
yes, yeah.
And if you don't count the Switch re-release.
And that one was after like 12 years with no new, or
another
9 years.
Yeah. I think, yeah. 2004 and then 2013, I think. Yeah.
And in 2032, I look forward to another one. So yes, as for watching, I saw many of the same things Bob did, but what other than that I watched all that new Stranger Things season. I think it was the best season yet.
How much Stranger Things are there? Because I think every month for the past 3 months, this has been an item.
Well, basically, in May, they released most of the new season, but not the last two episodes. And then over July 4th weekend, they released the last two episodes of the season. And it was really good. There are too many characters, and it's too long, but I really liked it. And they are also, as the algorithm told them to, they're upping the gay quotient in it too, which is positive for me.
Okay.
But yeah, no, it's a good show. It's fun. Sometimes it's fun to watch the zeitgeisty thing. And this, I've seen crappier seasons of Stranger Things. This one was really good.
And is that why you watch the next thing?
Yes. I mean, I watched the next episode of Marvel, the TV show in theaters, Thor, Love and Thunder.
So Comic-Con just happened. As a Marvel fan, when you see that giant wall of logos, do you just want to like throw up?
You know, it's starting to feel like too much even for me.
Like, this is your assignment.
I've said it before, but this is exactly what I wanted. Like, this is a wish come true with Ironic Genie.
The monkey paw curled a finger in.
It is. I read every Marvel comic all the time, and I thought, I want an interconnected... Wouldn't it be great if there were an interconnected universe like that? Obviously, that will never happen, because if they have a Spider-Man movie, it's just Spider-Man. He's not going to meet other characters. Now, every movie has every character in it from everything, and everything's a crossover. So much so to the fact that their new thing... they reveal at the Comic-Con is it's the multiverse saga, and I fully expect the film that caps it off, Avengers Secret Wars, which the comic that is based on is about multiple universes intersecting. I think they're gonna, when they get to the firework factory of that, It will have every actor who's been in any Marvel movie ever all together at once. Everybody that they can get, I think.
Well,
it's
all filmed separately.
Yes. Oh, well,
and then
sure.
Composited together.
Yeah, but yeah, Thor: Love and Thunder as a film by itself, it's all right. It's all right. Not half as good as Ragnarok. Ragnarok, and I mean, certainly I was feeling the COVID blues of it. Of like, boy, this just looks kind of crappy in parts. Like, everything's just very disconnected, and the special effects don't look particularly good enough.
Taika Waititi, don't waste your time on this. Do your own thing.
Yeah, I like his other stuff, but including What We Do in the Shadows, the new season, which I've been watching this month. Really, really great. But yeah, Thor: Love and Thunder, man. But I'm looking for it. I know, Bob. I'm just watching all my assignments. I watched all of Ms. Marvel this month, too. And it was all right. It was good. It's good. It's good. They don't make her half as Muslim as I want her to be, though. Aww. Like, they, I mean, it's not like she's not a Muslim in it, but she, in the first comics, they worked hard to have her, like, quote the Quran and actually have it, like, at least to my outsider's ears, it sounded like, boy, that sounds like a deep cut from the Quran. I don't know, but at least she is like
it's one of Muhammad's B-sides.
But she is a practicing Muslim in the show. But the next month, in August, that's the one I've been waiting forever for, She-Hulk. I love She-Hulk. She's one of my favorite characters. I've been reading She-Hulk comics since I was like fucking 8. I love She-Hulk. I've been waiting for this.
Designed to make men horny, though.
Oh, yeah. But hey, there's a lot of Elvira-style sex symbol ladies that also have gay followings. Straight guys like her for horny reasons, and then gay guys like her for... There was a really good Pride comic Marvel put out this last month, full of short story collections of, like, classic Marvel characters and some less new ones, or some newer ones too, and they introduced a trans character who loves She-Hulk, and she grew up dreaming of being a woman, in part because She-Hulk inspired her with her version of femininity. It was a really good story, but anyway, yeah, I'm really looking forward. Also, Tatiana Maslany, she's a good actress. But okay, enough Marvel talk. Yes, that roadmap does seem like a whole lot of work. There's too many movies in 1 year. That's really the problem. These phases used to last 4 years. The phase is now 18 months, I think, of movies.
And now Star Wars is just a TV show, right?
Yeah, Star Wars. No Star Wars movies getting announced anytime soon. They're all TV shows.
That kind of surprised me, but I guess it shouldn't.
Other stuff I watched this month was that new Nathan Fielder show, The Rehearsal. It's great. It is great. If you want the peak of cringe reality show comedy stuff, like, it is it. It is like a wonder to behold. I don't want to even spoil it. It's just amazing. If you got HBO Max, watch it. I've been watching that Bird Girl show. It's all right. It's good. It's growing on me. It is just like a BoJack workplace comedy kind of thing, though. It gets in that zone.
Is it in the Harvey Birdman universe?
Yes, but they're not allowed to have any H&B characters. It's all originals.
You know, I never went back to see that Harvey Birdman movie they made, or that special they made.
I heard it was less good, and now if you watch it, it's all about the Trump era, which it'll seem dated as fuck. But the Bird Girl show, it's Bird Girl, Mentok's daughter, and then just original characters everywhere else. But it's good, and Padgett Brewster rules. I love her.
I've always loved her.
I watched all the new season of the Iron Chef on Netflix, and then watching old Iron Chef on Peacock. Great time. And I see it as preparing me for the eventual 33% Iron Chef Futurama will be doing soon.
That's the season 3 closer. That's, I think, in September or October.
I think it's October. It's October. I think you're right. Yeah. Then I watched some of the new 4K version of Panda Go Panda, the G Kids put out. They're putting out new versions, all the Miyazaki stuff. And the last thing I want to talk about, other than the live show we both went to, was I went to Hadestown. I had not seen Hadestown before, didn't know any of the songs from it. It was really, 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 really good. I saw the traveling group in San Francisco. It's like, a jazzy rock musical, like Hadestown, deep in town, Hadestown.
This is reminding me of the musical they did in Home Movies.
Bye Bye Greasy.
Yeah.
But no, it's... if I described it, it would sound kind of lame, but I promise you, I swear I didn't think it was lame, but it was, it's, guess what, Bob? It's the future. It's climate problems have caused people to go underground, the haves and the have nots. It's a class struggle, but also it's a retelling of the story of Hades and Eurydice. Eurydice.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's there's some really great songs, especially Wait For Me is my favorite song. But anywho, that was great to see live at the Orpheum. And then me and you saw quite a fun live thing, too.
Yeah, we saw Tim Heidecker on his new tour where he's doing
the two Tims.
Some of his, you know, fun stand-up comedy character and also his sincere and also funny songs.
Yes.
And it was a great show. I'm not very familiar with his musical output, but I enjoyed what I heard. And he played a very, very funny song from Bob Dylan that Bob Dylan, I'm sure, thought was a very good song. So he's probably doing it on his tour. But he plays the song Lenny, and it's real.
Yeah,
and it's a real song, and he stops to comment on the lyrics as he plays it because I'm like, wow. I'd look it up on YouTube when I got home.
Too.
Like, this can't be real.
Because he prefaces with, I know you guys are gonna think I'm faking this because I do this a lot. I'm Tim Heidecker. I know, but seriously, look it up for yourself. It's from these bad, forgotten Bob Dylan stuff. Yeah, I loved his new songs, like, and that he ended with my favorite of his real songs, Work From Home. Like, I love that song. And he, and also I didn't know Vic Berger was such a great musician. He was great.
I thought he was just the meme video guy. He's multi-talented. He was doing keyboards.
Yeah.
That night.
Man. It was so good. And yeah, his stand-up was the funny thing too with his, anti-woke comedy stand-up character, is that, to do the character correctly, he has to scream. But then when he comes out back as himself, he's like, horse voice, little horse, you know, I got to scream as that guy. And it, we were like the second show of his tour in San Francisco. So I hope he's hanging in there.
Seems like a lot of energy you got to expel immediately on that show. I get tired from doing a 1 hour live show where I sit and talk.
Yeah. Though, you know what? Tim Heidecker, he's in good shape. He's in great looking shape. And also, I got to give it to him, too, that he had a hole at his merch stand. One, they're like, okay, you're buying our, you know, $40 t-shirt. Do you also want to give some money to an abortion fund? It's like, oh, yeah, I'm being very selfish buying this $40 t-shirt. Yes, I give $10.
That's a great place to ask for more money.
Yeah.
And there's also a DSA sign-up table there, too. So
Tim's a good dude.
Yes.
That was a great, a fun night of comedy.
I've always loved Tim Heidecker.
Yeah, we had a nice time. though you mentioned there were, I didn't notice, the people sitting next to you were not there for the music.
I don't know why they were there. It was like three tech bros. I assume they were tech bros based on the way.
I guess it was a status thing, perhaps.
Yeah, or it's like they knew about like Awesome Show or whatever, but I just remember the one of the guys telling the other guys, like, oh man, you gotta come to my bachelor party, it's gonna be a complete banger. And I'm like, what are these guys doing at a Tim Heidecker show? And it seems like they didn't enjoy anything. When everyone stood up for parts of the show, they sat down and just talked amongst themselves. So I'm like, why did they stay?
Get out of here. Yeah, man. Ugh. But it was also fun, like I actually had been to the Palace of Fine Arts before, but I didn't realize that I had forgotten because I didn't explore the pretty parts of it. But the Palace of Fine Arts, or Place of Fine Arts, as Tim kept calling it.
You've seen it in a lot of movies.
Yes. Yeah. It was, for instance, if you've seen The Rock, that's where, after the big car chase in the start of the movie, that's where Sean Connery and Nicolas Cage kind of talk to each other. Yeah. So
and people are always doing photo shoots there because it's very pretty.
Yeah. We walked by multiple photo shoots for, like, I think they were for weddings, I think.
It seemed like it. Yeah. Let's move on to comments for Talking Simpsons, the first episode, Treehouse of Horror 2. And Joe Hodgson says, candy necklaces are a thing that still exists, despite being pretty terrible candy. I can't recall seeing any in my kids' Halloween hauls, but they definitely show up at birthday parties. There are also bracelet varieties. Candy cigarettes still exist too, as do bubblegum cigars. I had to get my kids' passports last year and was slightly taken aback when the postal employee taking care of us offered my kids a bubblegum cigar. It just struck me as an oddly specific thing to decide to have on hand to gift to kids who are getting their first passport.
That is is crazy. Like, I feel like you have to special order bubblegum cigars. Like, you can't buy them at like a Sam's Club or whatever, the Safeway.
I feel like only one company makes them now.
Yeah, and probably somebody who does it out of political intent of like, the woke scolds don't want us to give kids bubblegum cigars anymore, but I'll be damned if I'm going to give in to them.
I assume that like there was a tradition of when, because I saw it in old cartoons, of course, like when your wife has a baby, you pass out cigars.
Yeah.
Or maybe other good events in your life happen. I bought candy cigarettes as a kid, but they weren't good candy.
No, they suck.
And I bought them again in college because I was like, oh, candy cigarettes, that's fun. And I was like, this is just like eating chalk.
Yeah, the detail that the candy bracelets and necklaces are at kids' birthday parties, that really struck a chord with me. It was like, oh yeah, your gift bag or the birthday bags you hand out to all the kids at a big birthday party.
With the cheap, rotten candy.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem to get much cheaper than that terrible candy. Man, remember that great Birthday Boy show we went to where one of their bits was just throwing shitty grandma candy into the audience? Of like, here's some Necco wafers and just toss them in there.
I didn't get any crappy candy. Not one bit of honey for me.
James Babbo also said about that episode, every time I've watched that third segment, I was reminded of the 1958 Hammer film, The Revenge of Frankenstein. When Burns tells Smithers he's going to die and he tells him what to do, it's exactly the end of the film where Dr. Frankenstein, played by Peter Cushing, is dying and tells his assistant, you know what to do. The flunky then puts the doctor's brain into a new body that coincidentally looks exactly like his old body. Considering this is a kind of Frankenstein parody, it cannot be coincidence that the endings are similar, and I'm sure the writer's room were Hammer fans. It's possible. I agree. I think that's possible.
They would
have said it on the commentary, I feel like.
I think so. Yeah. Did John Swartzwelder write that one, that sketch? I forget.
I think it was Vitti. Okay. I think it was, but I mean, because... The writer, I mean, this is easily looked up. You might be right, Swartzwelder, but the only credit I remember them doling out was that on the commentary that it was Jay Kogan who did the Davy Crockett.
Oh, yeah, I'm Davy Crockett. Yes, I mean, you know what to do is a pretty bland generic line, but it could also come from the movie. Somebody could have been a stinker and snuck that in as like a reference.
I mean, these hardcore, if you... were a nerd of that age in the early 90s, you probably did watch a lot of those Hammer horror films growing up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's why Peter Cushing's in Star Wars, because it was a Hammer Films nerd, George Lucas, casting the movie.
And also being filmed in England.
Yeah, that makes it easier. Yeah, that's true.
Let's move on to Sweets and Sour Marge. So Boyd Atkins IV says Libby is correct, and they did change the recipe to Butterfinger when Nestle sold the candy bar to Ferraro in 2018. As a person whose favorite candy bar was Butterfinger, I can tell you the new recipe is so different that they could have changed the name and made it completely separate. If you're curious and want to know if it'll take you back to your childhood, the answer is no. It's a stark reminder that everything changes and adulthood is a scam.
Damn, man, boy, you know what? They shouldn't be bringing back the old slogan then in that Butterfinger Cops commercial stuff, because it's so different now.
The thing is, after doing this podcast and reading this comment, I was like, I want to find a Butterfinger. But in this area, no matter where I go, nobody has a Butterfinger.
Wow.
All the fingers have been laid on the Butterfingers. And you know what? I'm filing that into the Better Off That Didn't Happen department, because I have not had a candy bar in over a decade. I don't want to start eating candy bars in my 40s.
It seems a little late for that. Yeah. Boy, not even like just a miniature from the free bowl somewhere.
Maybe
whatever.
Like a fun size, but I have not like purchased a candy bar at a store.
Wow, man, we live different lives. No, I know. I haven't bought a full size candy bar in a while. I've purchased sweets, don't get me wrong, but just like a Twix, I'll get that in the at checkout. Like, no, I don't do that.
Yeah,
like,
the sweets I do purchase now are high quality. I buy See's chocolates at the airport.
Oh, sure, yeah.
If you want a $60 box of chocolates, they've got them.
Twix, my number one candy bar. That's Butterfingers far to the bottom. It's crazy Nestle can just sell off one candy bar. They're like, not the whole business, just Butterfinger.
Yes, we don't want it anymore. It's got the Simpsons stink on it. You know what? When I go to Target and other stores, I see what looks like a Butterfinger, but it's some Reese's thing.
Oh, it's right.
Some Reese's product.
Yeah, it's like Reese's. The Reese's peanut butter cups now are just like, oh, it's also just like a Reese's bar. Like the Reese's, Reese's can be anything. It's really expanded.
I have not bought a candy bar in over a decade, but occasionally I will buy a little bag of the dark, thin Reese cups, and I'll put them in the freezer.
That's good, yeah.
And it's good to have, like, one with coffee.
I prefer those thin ones to, the bell-shaped ones, because I prefer the spread out.
Yeah, me too.
Peanut butter than it's all just in one, like, hunk, yeah. Ron Sterling says about that episode, my wife's grandmother was at the time of her graduation the tallest woman to ever matriculate her high school at the statuesque 5'9". The tallest man? It was indeed Robert Wadlow, who graduated 2 years earlier in 1936 from their tiny school near St. Louis, Missouri. She described the sound of his footsteps as seeming like thunderclaps. She died 2 years ago at the age of 100. Sadly, Robert would only survive to 22. I don't know if she still holds the record for the tallest woman at Alton High, but I was always more of an Uncle John's bathroom reader than a Guinness World Records guy.
Yep, it's always going to be Wadlow. You can't beat that guy.
No, I mean, I suppose if somebody wanted to experiment with enough growth hormones, but I feel like then... The Guinness wouldn't honor that. It'd be cheating.
He was a pure blood freak.
Though I guess, you know, certainly there's been taller people than 5'9", and I would think just in St. Louis, taller women than 5'9". Like with all the shit and food today, like people are growing taller.
It's true. Yeah. Actually, when I was in Japan, I was surprised that people aren't as short as I was told they would be.
There's some short people. There's some real.
I think it's because of the addition to milk to diets in Japan.
One of my favorite videos of our pal Steve Yurko was when he was last in Japan, and he's like, you know, 6'6". He's a tall guy.
Yeah.
Just him walking down the street in Japan, and like people just stop him like, hey, oh my God, look at you. And like, I think a group of drunk businessmen who seemed younger than him were like, we want to lift you up like it's, you know, at a high school pep rally or whatever, and just throw him in the air because they were so impressed at his height. Yeah.
I was usually the tallest person on a train. Unfortunately, my wife does fit the stereotype. She's very small.
I was often the taller person on the train too when I've been there. I'll scope out my height comparatively the next time I'm there, which hopefully, you know, eventually it'll happen.
I need to take my honeymoon there.
Yeah. One of these days. Yeah.
Let's move on to Lisa's Pony. Joe Hodgson says, this is an episode that if I watch it with my kids, makes me look like a bad dad, because when Homer shamefully realizes he doesn't have a picture of Lisa in his wallet, my kids ask why I don't have pictures of them in my wallet. The answer is obvious, because my cell phone is loaded with them, but it reminds me that the wallet photo is kind of dead at this point, and yet you still get a bunch if you order school pictures that just accumulate in a drawer somewhere.
That's wasteful.
And I think the wallet photo is now your lock screen.
Yeah.
That's why my wife is on my lock screen.
Man, you're making me look bad that my husband isn't my lock screen.
What do you
screen,
have, Spider-Man?
Man? It is Spider-Man.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Henry, come on.
Well, you've seen it, but I figured you just knew that from the... Yeah,
I know
Spidey.
It was Spider-Man. Yeah.
It's Spidey with his cup of coffee from Spider-Verse.
Why don't you just marry Spider-Man?
No. I love my husband. Even if Spider-Man was real, I wouldn't.
He can be your wallpaper. Let's have a compromise. Your husband can be your wallpaper, and Spider-Man can be your lock screen.
Yeah, no, it's the same Spider-Man picture as wall screen and lock paper. But it's a reverse version of it. It's him upside down. But look, I have photos. I got multiple photos of him behind you on the wall, on the shelf there behind you, Bob. We have photos.
But I'm just saying, don't feel bad. I think that is the wallet picture is now your lock screen. And then also the thousands of photos you have on your phone.
Yeah. I mean, too, it's like if you're a dad, it's you have to have that thing on the back of your van of like the stick figure family, every member of it. You know, that's the wallet photo.
I like the one that's two adult stick figures and a pile of money.
Oh, I've not seen that one.
Yes, man. It's part of the child-free lifestyle.
Also on Lisa's Pony, Patrick Howell says, as not only a band director, but also someone who plays a reeded instrument, the clarinet, The fact that Lisa is 8 and plays with a Barry sax with a size 4.5 reed has to be a joke. The thickest size I've played on is a 4, and most days, even that is like trying to make sound on a block of wood. Hmm. So a 4.5 reed, I didn't realize how thick a 4 is, and the 4.5 for an 8-year-old girl to use for a giant saxophone, yeah, it is pretty funny.
Yeah, I think like Mike Reese or Al Jean, one of their brothers, played the sax, but I guess
he played
a different kind of sax than what Lisa has.
Yeah, it's funny to hear. I wonder if they're closer or not now, but he joked about how like, oh yeah, my brother's, I think he, oh yeah, he, when he talks about the Cape Fear soundtrack, and he says like, "Oh yeah, listen to the violins there. Oh, I guess it's brass. I should know that. My brother, is a musician." I was like, "Oh yeah, this guy. I hope him and his brother have reconnected more." But I appreciate having a real band director and reeded instrument player, Patrick, way in there.
We'll send our complaints to Algina Mike Reeves. Jaws Wired Shut is up next, and Sean Riley says, "Great episode, dudes. With regards to modern movie trailer parody discussion, I think that the spooky version of an old rock song would be done in an updated 2022 joke. They even did it for the recent season of Stranger Things with Separate Ways by Journey." Yes, and I feel bad that I didn't think of that. Like, what do they do with songs and trailers now? They do this to the point where I've been in theaters. When it happens, people laugh.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, oh, come on. Or the people just scoff. Like, this does not work anymore.
You know, with Stranger Things, I'll give them credit too, because it was a remix of the Journey song. They didn't get a cover of it. They just, like, it'd be like, the real Journey song, "Someday Love Will Find You," boom, boom, boom. And then, you know, some dramatic music would cut in. And then it was like they had the a cappella version of it, and then they cut in their own music to it. And it also, this is not a super spoiler for Stranger Things finale, but it did the anime thing of, they're playing the trailer song. Separate Ways has come in now in the actual episode. This is serious.
Oh, that is an anime thing.
Yes, yeah. And you know, in that very good trailer for Wakanda Forever, the next Black Panther movie, it also does this. It's the No Woman, No Cry. It's a cover of it.
Do you think that's... I don't know. People are allowed to feel ways about this thing, but it feels like, isn't it like a little disrespectful to Chadwick Boseman if it's just like, he's actually dead. Give us your money.
Yeah, well, I mean,
I know they're also paying tribute to a great man who lost very early, but it also feels like a corporation is puppeting his corpse around a little bit.
It's really complicated. Yeah.
I mean, it's very tricky. I'm not trying to be disrespectful myself. I felt a little icky about it.
The cast and creators of it seem very invested in it and wanting it to be a tribute to Chadwick, and it would certainly, his estate, what you would think, wouldn't want to be involved in it if they, or would have prevented it.
Yeah.
It all sounds very complicated, but also, yes, it is. I do feel like Marvel is trying to present it to of just like, no, this isn't disrespectful. See how respectful everybody else is here? Anyway, you know, you'd be really insulting Chadwick if you didn't show up to the
exactly.
movie. If you didn't show up in theaters.
Chadwick wants you to buy that steel box.
No, it's very, I mean, it's also super sad because like,
yeah,
Black Panther really was this huge thing. It made $1 trillion without being a giant crossover because there had never really been a black superhero film to that size in America that was presented that way. And, you know, for a whole generation, like, this was their superhero. Like, they, and then he's taken away by fate, you know, he's taken away from you right when you meet him. And it's, you know, some fans have said they should recast, some said they shouldn't. And it's, but it's now just so depressing that, like, and I guess the point of the movie will be to get over that depression and there's going to be a new Black Panther. But some fans have said they should recast because it's like T'Challa is bigger than this guy, or bigger than even Chadwick Boseman, and that they shouldn't take away T'Challa from fans just because the actor died. They've recast other people in roles, but yeah, seems like they're not doing that.
Yeah. But it's a very tricky situation.
Yeah, but hey, I'm also excited that Namor's in it, man. I love Namor. He's so great. He's Imperious Rex, the ridiculous.
Is Namor some kind of seaman?
Yeah, he's the Submariner, Bob.
Okay,
And he predates Aquaman, even though Aquaman's more famous. He's the Submariner. He's got wings on his feet. He can fly. He's and also they have now, he'd always been drawn as a white man, up to this point, but the actor playing him, I believe, is Mexican, and they are changing things up a bit with the people of Atlantis, which is totally fine by
me. Yeah, go for it.
So, that movie has to make a new Black Panther, be a tribute to Chadwick Boseman, and introduce all of Atlantis and Namor, and probably there's some multiverse bullshit in there.
It's going to be 3.5 hours long.
Yeah, okay, November, can't wait for it. I believe in Ryan Coogler. I think he's great. Sorry, all this Marvel talk here. Also on that episode, Harry Thornton says, Soccer Mommy being both an adult gross-out comedy and a kid's film didn't seem that weird to me because, and I say this as someone who grew up watching them, there was this weird streak in the early aughts of just having very mature parental bonus jokes in family films. You guys already talked about Trek on another podcast, but another great example is the 2002 Scooby-Doo movie, one James Gunn wrote. It was going to be either PG-13 or R, but Warner Brothers got cold feet and re-edited it to be more family-friendly. Despite that, it's still filled to the brim with sex and drug references, and they even had to digitally remove cleavage from some of the female characters. Yes, yeah, I think James Gunn wanted to go much dirtier in his version of Scooby-Doo, and they were going to be like postmodern and meta, and they're like, this is for the American Pie generation. But as it got closer to release, they're like, we don't want to be that dirty. And now there's going to be a new Velma show with like tits and blood and shit in it, man.
This is why elder millennials are more loose and free. All the true millennials, they had the cleavage erased.
Yeah,
they didn't get to see breasts.
You know, also Soccer Mommy, this in his reference to that, it also reminded me of, and I know this not because I watched it, but because I cleaned the theaters of it at AMC Theaters, Kangaroo Jack. Because that was a raunchy sex adventure comedy full of like dirty jokes. But they then have like one fantasy sequence where the kangaroo, who is not anthropomorphic for the whole movie, he has a dream sequence. Jerry O'Connell's character gets knocked out, has a dream sequence.
That's right.
Where he raps and dances. And once they got that footage, they're like, we're marketing this to kids, but it's like, no, this is a fucking boner PG-13 comedy. Like, yeah. It's...
I'd rather see Cherokee Jack.
I'm Cherokee Jack. But yes, that the dirty family friendly, now it just seems very sectioned off of like, you get your R-rated Batmans, or like, yeah, there's the R-rated Harley Quinn cartoon at the same time as they're making that Batwheel show that is just like Pixar's Cars for Batman.
Jesus.
Yep. Yeah. They're doing it all.
Please stop. Let's move on to What a Cartoon comments. Little Mermaid's up first, and Drew Mackey, friend of the show, says, the fear of liking a girl's movie was real. I liked this movie in private and got picked on in my own home for wanting the VHS. But unlike Jem, which I secretly wanted to watch, even though it was pretty clearly written for girls, this was the first instance I can remember of understanding that female protagonist does not equal things for girls explicitly. Not that it was an argument I was brave enough to make on the playground. Mm-hmm. Yes, Drew feels my pain.
Yeah, see, I mean, also I know Drew had mentioned this to me before too, that like he had a similar thing with wrestling, that like he was scared to want to watch wrestling because you were accused of being gay if you wanted to watch that too. That's I guess I feel lucky my mom did not put that on my brother and I mean
this was not put me on me by my mom, by the way. This is everybody around me.
I'm sorry,
except for my
I'm
parents
sorry. I didn't notice it with the other people around me too. I did later. My dad didn't like that I watched Ranma One Half, that it was full of like girls and flowers and stuff.
Hey, but it's full of girls.
I know. Well, not in a objectifying enough way for. Well, when he walked by seeing the opening, if I could have showed him like, no, look, they're objectifying these women. There's boobs there. You know,
look at all these bath scenes.
Yeah. But, by the way, Drew Mackey just put out a really cool video folks should check out on the history of Blanka and why Blanka is the character in Street Fighter's name, even though he is green and
that's
should
right.
be like Verde. So
I did not know that.
He really dug deep in some history stuff, and I believe paid a multiple translators to translate Japanese only interviews, and he dug really deep in it. Watch his video on YouTube. Go to his feed and you'll find it there too, and it's part of a series of written blog posts he's done on some very deep dives into video game history.
Those
so
are really good
out. Yeah.
I'm happy. I'm always happy to see new blog material.
Yeah.
No one's blogging anymore.
Also on Little Mermaid, Matt says, Christopher Daniel Barnes was also Greg Brady in the 90s Brady Bunch movies. He's way more hilarious and entertaining in that role than is Eric. And yeah, he got
I didn't
the joke
know that.
In that. Yes, yeah, he's the eldest Brady boy in it. Yeah, I forget that too. He's talking about that Brady Bunch movie. That's another one of those, like the Scooby-Doo movie would have been. Like it has some dirtier jokes in that Brady Bunch movie.
But
like,
still PG-13.
Yes, yeah, he's got the lesbian the closeted lesbian girl who's into Marsha. There's also like the joke of the horny next door neighbor who keeps hitting on Mr. Brady,
and Sam the Butcher talking about his meat.
Yes, yeah, yeah. It's there's some dirty stuff in there,
worth revisiting.
And Christopher Daniel Barnes, though, we'll always remember him as the best Spider-Man voice, or one of the best Spider-Man voice actors. Yes.
He surely really talked fast in those episodes.
Yes, yeah.
Let's move on to Talking Futurama. Roswell That Ends Well is up first, and some bloke says, "I have to respectfully disagree with Henry's new timeline theory. In the day the Earth stood stupid," from slightly earlier in the same production season, probably because they knew this was coming, "it was established that Fry singularly lacks a delta brainwave, which is later established as being the product of his temporal paradox descent. This suggests a closed timeline in which Fry was always going to become his own grandfather, which he already was. This is also consistent with later time travel episodes that also feature closed loops, and of course, in one later episode, we find out the entire universe resets, meaning time itself is one big loop. I think the writers favored this version of time travel because it's screwier to get your head around initially, but has certain mathematical logic to it, similar to cyclic structures." Cyclic structures?
I guess
sure.
Cyclic.
Cyclic,
yeah,
structures.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Sunbloke.
Yeah, thank you, Sunbloke. You know what? I can't disagree with that. I still like to think about it creating new timelines, but you're right with the Delta Brainwave thing predates this episode and certainly implies they already knew the timeline stuff and Nibbler and his relationship to Fry. But also, it fits with later time travel episodes, including my favorite Comedy Central era episode, The Late Mr. Philip J. Fry, which shows that time is just a repeating loop and that you can just basically go around the bend again and get like, okay, no, we're back here. It's the same.
I think they do a lot of laps in that episode. It's really good. It's an Emmy winner.
Meaning that they can't, time traveling doesn't change it. So yeah, I agree with you, Sunbloke. I agree with your endorsement there. Andrew Bouvier also said about the episode, "I can't be 100% sure, but I think Enos's order of a pie with a fried egg on it is a slight reference to how in northern New England, especially Vermont, it's actually tradition to serve warm apple pie with a slice of cheddar cheese on it. There's even some silly, superfluous state laws about it." And then he has links to the
laws. Oh, yeah.
Laws on
it. I looked up this the state of Vermont apple pie law. "The state pie shall be an apple pie." So number one.
Yes.
Section two, serving apple pie. "When serving apple pie in Vermont, a good faith effort shall be made to meet one or more of the following conditions. A, with a glass of cold milk. B, with a slice of cheddar cheese weighing a minimum of 1/2 ounce. Or C, with a large scoop of vanilla ice cream."
Wow.
You must make a good faith effort to provide one of those items with the pie.
Well,
this was approved on May 10th, 1999.
Man, you know what? Then Bernie Sanders has some blame on that.
Where was he?
Just a fat cat up in the Senate, I guess.
In one of his many houses.
if that's the law, then I guess I'll just have to go with the ice cream scoop thing, even though I prefer a unadorned apple pie slice. Like when I've had Alamode, look, I'm not saying it's bad, but there's something to the speed at which you must eat it, because the hot apple pie meets the cold scoop of ice cream, that's good for like 3 bites, but eventually they just meet in the middle as like the same temperature and goopy.
Ice cream next to the pie.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It's better that way.
Well, I guess also it's up to the apple pie to have the correct structural density to hold up that scoop.
It's all very complicated.
Yeah. I love apple pie, but I've never had it with the slice of cheese on top. Sounds wrong to me.
I don't know. I was thinking about it. You know, pastries do have cheese in and on them. It's not that crazy. So.
Yeah, but apple with cheese, man, I'm trying to remember if I've had much of that.
I've
ever.
I've had like, if you're making like a charcuterie board, you can have like a cracker with like a slice of apple and a slice of cheese on it, pop it in your mouth.
I keep that works. Separate on the, it's either the cheese on it or the apple on it.
Mix them up. Put a yeah. little hot mustard on there, buddy.
Well, now I want to try a fried egg on it. you know,
I don't want to try that. Moving on to Anthology of Interest 2, because we forgot, or I forgot to include comments on this one last time, so I apologize for that. Shy Ranger says, been waiting for this episode so I can tell a fun story. When I played the game Super Scribblenauts for the DS, for those who don't know, it's a game where you type nouns to make any object appear. One of the game's puzzles involved being the wizard and helping Scarecrow, Tin Man, and Lion. For the Lion, you were asked to give him something to make him have courage, and I jokingly remembered, who needs courage when you have a gun? And I gave him a gun, and it worked!
Wow! Oh, that's so cool, man.
Those games were so neat, and I think we just we forgot about them.
Yeah, they're...
Well, they made too many of them, too.
Yes. I mean, Warner dumped them out really fast. But yeah, they were always a fun... They were at least fun for a few hours, and I think my favorite as a Dorko was that they did a DC one that included, like, you could put in pretty much any up to that point existing obscure DC character or item and they would appear, and it would solve DC related problems too.
Yeah, they did everything with that license.
But that's so funny that a gun, like, yep, gun gave him courage. Like, they I mean, how do they make it all work? It's like amazing that all that stuff works in it.
I wouldn't be surprised if some nerd made that, like, into the game, like, yeah, made that reference, like, let's make sure this works.
I would not be shocked. Yeah. Also on Anthology of Interest, Kaiser Beam says, and by the way, Kaiser Beams also did another great YouTube video I want to point people to. I just watched Kaiser Beam's Kyoto video for Arcadia of My Youth, the Captain Harlock movie. Mm. Really good video and tribute to a great, great film.
Yes, yeah. I love Kaiser Beam's videos on YouTube. Mostly things I haven't seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's like half and half of stuff I've seen, stuff I haven't. Yeah, but Kaiser Beam says, when I was a teenage nerd, when given the choice between Weezer and Rush, I went Rush all the way. Not just because I was also a huge music nerd who dug the shit out of Neil Peart's complex drum solos, Alec Lifeson's catchy riffs, and Geddy Lee's slick bass licks. I also played bass at the time. But also because, at the time, Weezer was in their Beverly Hills era, and having that stupid song play every hour on the radio soured me on them for a while. And while I can appreciate Weezer now, the best song on Pinkerton doesn't hold a candle to the entirety of Signals, my favorite Rush album.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah.
Boy, bringing up Beverly Hills, we talked a lot with Matt Apodaca on our Simpsons podcast.
Yeah, it became a Weezer podcast for about 15 minutes. Yeah.
And then he had to go, so we wasted a lot of his time. But Beverly Hills, I can't believe that Rancid song became a hit.
Yeah, big hit.
And it feels like it feels like you wrote a bad pop song on purpose to make it successful.
Yeah,
but
it works.
Yeah, bad influence. The success of that song was a bad influence on Weezer.
But I also can see that, you know, neither of us are musicians. If you love the complexity of a Rush song, and, like, I mean, Weezer songs are not as complexly written, I would bet, compared.
No, they're just all short pop songs.
Yeah, with power chords and all that stuff. And then, especially after Matt Sharp left the band, it's not half as complex as that.
We all know how it goes.
But yes.
1997 was a bad time
for
Weezer.
Check out Kaiser Beam's great videos on YouTube, as always, guys.
Yes, please do. And then, wrapping things up, Talking of the Hill, up first is the final Shinsalt, and Joe Hodgson is back, and he says, my DMV, or RMV in the state I live, has basically been the opposite of what you guys have experienced. Growing up in New Hampshire, getting my first license sucked and took forever. Worst of all, my dad thought we could just skate through without having my birth certificate, so we had to do it twice.
Oof.
Yes, whereas when I moved to Boston later in life and had to get a Massachusetts ID, the process was pretty quick because they were prepared for a lot of people. It was like the deli counter at a supermarket. You just take a number and have a seat. I just had to get my license renewed in person this year in my new suburban town, and it was okay, better than 4 years ago or whatever it was when I last did it. I was probably in and out within half an hour, and now I don't have to do it again for nearly a decade, so my next one can be done online.
Oh, man, yes. Do it online. That's nice.
Yes, you can, in California, you can renew online.
Okay.
You don't have to go in anymore.
Oh, see, the last time I was in there to get the real ID version of it.
Yes, you had to go in there to prove you're not a terrorist.
So hopefully next time I can still prove I'm not a terrorist while getting it renewed online.
I hate, for all the things that prove your identity, I hate that you also have to have your birth certificate sometimes. Because We lost my original one, and I have one that I got like official copy of it notarized in the year 2000. So it's already a 22-year-old photocopy that I have to hold on to. And then some people like raise an eyebrow, like, I don't have a 40-year-old. I have a 22-year-old piece of paper. I don't have a 40-year-old piece of paper. Okay,
man. They think you're trying to do the pull old Rusty Shackleford.
Exactly. It's just like, here's my passport. Here's my Nexus card. Here's my ID. It's just like, oh, you need a birth certificate.
It's like, well, you think all three of these things were faked? Like, if that's so, then I think they should still just let you through because you successfully faked those three major things.
I blame Joe Brandon and his Patriot Act.
Yeah, that's true. That's
it's making all our lives so much more painful every day, every day.
Yeah, it's like I'm stealing this from a tweet I saw, but it was like, we're all afraid of being shot all the time, not of shoe bombs. Like, let us keep our fucking shoes on in the airport now. You know, I don't care about a shoe bomb.
Yes.
I'm going to be, everybody in America is terrified about the sound of a gunshot. They're not afraid of shoe bombs. All right. And finally, from our last comment is from Leanne's Saga episode of King of the Hill, because we did two this month, catching up. Icy Wiener says, one joke that I love from the scene where Peggy talks about the fork to the back was like a knife through the heart was that Luann says her mom isn't like that anymore. She doesn't drink and doesn't even eat with a fork. I believe Luann's line is a joke, as of course her mom doesn't drink or eat with a fork. She's in prison. Like, yes.
That was a joke I missed because the character says it's so matter of fact. But yeah, when she says, the mom has changed, she doesn't eat with a fork anymore and she stopped drinking. Yes, because she's in prison.
She's in prison. Yeah. It'd be very hard to get her hands on a fork or alcohol in prison.
I'm glad Icy Wiener caught a hidden joke.
Yes.
The show is full of them. It's too well written.
It's too well written, too full of good jokes, and also written in a way that people underestimated at all times, and even us who are trying to read it at maximum level, even we can miss some ultra subtle jokes sometimes.
That's why you patrons save the day.
Yes, thank you so much.
Yes,
and thanks as always, really.
Yes, thank you for listening, everybody. Again, it's gonna be a fun August. We're wrapping up the Disney Renaissance summer, covering things like on top of that, Smiling Friends, new Talking Futurama, new Talking of the Hill, some big fun guests coming up on Talking Simpsons. It's gonna be great.
Yeah, oh man, yeah, this last month we had some great big guests. We finally had Mike Mitchell. That was some ups and downs and trying to get him, but it's because he is a very busy man. He was like in between filming Twisted Metal when he recorded with
us. That's true. So we got him on the rise. I hope he doesn't forget about us. We don't know if we're going to PAX yet. We're waiting on the approval. As soon as we know, you will know too. Check our Twitter account at TalkSimpsonsPod, or you can follow me and Henry. I'm at Bob Servo and you're at HENEREYG.
That's right.
I know it. I can do it now. And thanks for listening. We'll see you again next time for another episode. Take care.
Wow, infotainment.